Production. Recorded live.
You're listening to Freedom Fighters for America World Radio at www.freedomfightersforamerica.com. Tonight we have a super special, and that's with Stu Webb hosting, so stay tuned. Freedom Fighters for America is located at www.freedomfightersforamerica.com, and now Stu Webb.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to host this show this evening. And I have a special guest on. And it's been on Canadian radio before, I think, two or three times. And he's a former Area 51 scientist, one of few that have survived. He can tell you about the attack and his group that he worked with, who were all killed. There were top scientists. He's built a few weapons, unusual things, met with Mr. President Johnson, built him a special toy for his right pocket, or his left pocket, whichever it was. He used to keep his hand in, and that was a cold arms project, and this man was responsible for that. And we're going to talk about aliens tonight, and we're going to talk about who the aliens really are and the knowledge coming from a man who was nearly executed on stage with Bull Greitz at a big forum, hit with a weapon, knocked into a coma for quite a period of time, and is here to live at 75 years of age to talk about it. Ed Slade, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stu.
I'll tell you, why don't you get into your story? Why don't you get into the how we're going to do it tonight so the people of the world that will hear this recording will understand what the aliens are all about.
Well, the aliens start at the beginning, and you have to trace the origin back to the beginning. And we have a record of the aliens in the Bible. And then, unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, is the first discussion of the existence of the aliens. And we take it from there, and it's been put in secret literature for 6,000 years. And the 6,000 years has never been published until 6,000 years have passed. It was encoded in the Kabbalah, and that was a story written by Adam and Eve, who were at the present at the opening of the garden. And the code is encoded in the text of the King James Version. And unfortunately, nobody is aware of the code. But the code was so preserved at the beginning that everything flows from it. And I just wanted to start right at the beginning and let you run from there, because it takes many different paths by injecting different facts.
Now, go ahead, Ed. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that the Kabbalah was encoded in a book, and the book was never published until the first year of the seventh century. Now, after the sixth century, you start the seventh century. So in 2001, you start the seventh century, and the book was published, and it was published. The first printing was by Rav Berg, and there's an ISBN which I want to give you, because this is the beginning of everything.
And go ahead, put it out there.
The ISBN is the Library of Congress number to look up the book. It's 1-57 189 1-076-9. And that's the first volume, the first recorded text of the Bible. And it's the Bible that precedes the King James Version by many years. The King James Version is about 3,500 B.C., and this book is about 6,000 B.C., and it's very curious because there's 22 volumes. There's a volume for each story in the Bible, and it was encoded by Adam. And it was preserved for all these years by the people who were close to his family. And it has turned into a religion by people who read it casually, but it's not a religion. It's presented as reality because it took the lives of these people to write it, and they tell the truth. And that is very unusual because nowadays nobody tells the truth. And this book said it was true, and it was true by every observer who read the book and tried to change it. And you try to change the truth and you just step in mud, because once you take a true statement and try to change it, you change the rest of the story unaccountably. I can give you examples, but there's so many examples. In the first sentence of the King James Bible, there's an equivalent Hebrew text, and the Hebrew text is important because God, who wrote this book, says that in the beginning all people of the world spoke Hebrew. So it's important to go back to the Hebrew, and the Kabbalists did that. Now, the first sentence was, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And that's very simple to understand. But it doesn't say what date it was created. It tells the dates later on when you read the whole volume of the King James Version. It discusses the dates. It very clearly says it in the ancient text. And I'd like to point out that all the words are equivalent for translation. In the beginning, there's a word for beginning and end, and the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, where it says God created, there's a word called ace. E-S is pronounced ace. And ace is a combination of the first letter, alpha, and the last letter, which is tough, A-T. And that word is not translated in the beginning, but it's in the text. And to find the translation, you have to go way into the New Testament, into 2 Peter, into the 3rd chapter, and read on to the 6th chapter, because then it discusses what 8 is. And I just point that out as a code that's included in the Bible, and nobody is aware of it, and they haven't been aware of it since the text was published in 2001, and you now have the text and you can read it for yourself. But let me say that that I have been studying the text since I was 5 years old, and it's new to me every time I read it. So to get a summary of the text in 1 hour or 2 hours is almost impossible after you put 75 years minus five to learn how to read, and it's a puzzle, and the puzzle is immense, and only a scholar can look into it. And unfortunately, I self-qualify because I used all my intelligence to gain my lifetime goal, which was to go to the moon. And I created the first machine that was put on the first lunar excursion module to land on the moon. And that was the most exciting thing I ever did. And I look back on my career and I find it astounding. And it opens up so much intelligence that it's hard to describe. But whatever intelligence you gather from this, there's always somebody to say it didn't happen, it won't happen, and give a negative outlook. And this negative outlook, the negative opinions, are going to be challenged at the end of the world, which is coming very shortly, because the predictions of the Bible are very clear on the end of the world as we know it. And we are living at a time where everything is in chaos, because they're challenging everything that was written and preserved for 6,000 years. And I just wanted to mention what was preserved. The thing that was preserved was the first letter and the last letter. That's going back to the chapter on Peter in the New Testament, 2 Peter, which describes it. And the code has to be described by many sources in the King James. Decipher it, you get an amazing story. Now,
Ed, question. You've done some super interesting things, and I'm questioning about things, and you wouldn't speak it because you're a former high-level government clearance. You've met with queens and kings. You could touch on some of that background, because I think that people would be interested in that. You've worked for Johnson. You could use Johnson as an example when you built the coat of arms toy he carried around his pocket. That would probably be okay because it's not classified anymore. But you've done a lot of interesting things. I've come across many people, in different agencies that are familiar with a lot of the stuff. I've been in Area 51. I mean, we can go back to friends of mine like John Lair, Lair Jets, top-level CIA pilot. You know, of course, that was Area 51 Groom Lake. Then you have Area 51 Papoose Lake, which is the alien base. And, you know, Bob Lazar has a website that shows that the aliens are real. BobLazar.com, LAZZAR.com, I believe it is. He was an Area 51 employee. Now, we're going to try to keep this on focus where people understand it, who don't have any idea of this bigger picture of what has really gone on. But I'm going to kind of give a brief real quick of where we're at right now and how we got there. Ed's going to explain it. But what we have is 100 Illuminati bankers in the world that control 90% of the wealth of the world, folks. 100 families control, 100 men, not families, men, control 90% of the wealth of the world. In the United States, which was taken over by, I refer to as the Bush, Milman, Linder, Clinton crime family, which is on StuWeb.com, www.StuWeb.com, right up there, the flow chart. Take a look at it. Three legs of Iran-Contra. All this theft for the past 30 years, the killing of President Kennedy, the coup d'etat on Jimmy Carter's election, October surprise, the coup d'etat that they did in the 2000 election against the duly elected, what I call President of the United States from the year 2000, Albert Gore. These people have wiped out America financially. And where I'm talking about the wealth, listen to the number. In 1981, the House Banking Committee, Henry Gonzalez, who I worked with, he was chair during the 80s and 90s. In 1981, he was on the committee that GAO ordered up, and the United Nations done similar numbers, opened up and said that 1% of the population controlled 20% of the wealth of the United States, the corporations, everything, the wealth, period. And in 1981, us, the American people, 99% of us controlled 80% of the block of that wealth. Today, it is totally reversed, and they're controlling between 90 and 95% of the wealth because they kept stealing. Through all these frauds, junk bond, daisy chain fraud, savings and loan fraud, current bank bailout frauds, Enron frauds, it's always the same people. Now, some of the people that are involved in this, what they call the Illuminati bankers, 100 that control the world, there's three segments in this, three elements, fractions, should we say. One's called the European Illuminatis, one's called the Asian Illuminati, and the third is the American Illuminati.
Yes.
Now, in America, some of the ones are like George Herbert Walker Bush, my former father-in-law, Leonard Milman, who now is running the show for him, is Larry Mizell in Denver, Colorado. David Rockefeller, Lawrence Rockefeller, that deceased a few years ago, was worth $6 trillion when he died personally. Illuminati banker. W.R. Grace died here a couple years ago, but his son took over for him, Illuminati banker. Henry Kissinger, Illuminati banker. These are the American Illuminati bankers. Carl Linder, Chiquita Bananas, Ohio, Linder Financial Empire, should we say, three legs of Iran-Contra, Illuminati banker. I've come to realize, and it's tough for me to do this, and I've talked to Ed about it, I've talked to others about it, I've talked to some high-level people that are connected to Area 51. I've talked to high-level people of all of our government, of other governments, over the years. About this alien connection. There's nothing alien to it at all, folks. And the 100 Illuminati bankers, this is going to be far-fetched for some people to handle tonight. But there's bloodlines of these things.
Well, when
these
you go
Illuminati
to the bloodline,
bankers.
When you go to the bloodline, you go back and back and back until you hit ground zero, which is Adam and Eve. It turns out that in the Adam and Eve story, it was written down by Adam after he was kicked out of the garden. And the text exists in the ISBN that I quoted in the book called The Zohar. The Zohar is the illumination. And that is the story of the beginning of the world, starting with Adam and Eve, and they explain it in a very nice, concise manner. And now that it's published, everybody is trying to change it, but you can't change the text. It was written on stone. It was not written by Moses. He came 1,000 years later. 1,400 years later, and in the 1,400 years, there was a stone monument of the Zohar, and the Zohar was seen by humans, and specifically was seen by Julius Caesar. He saw the stone monument of the Zohar sitting in front of the temple of the library in Alexandria, Egypt. And he saw it there at the time of the fire that was destroyed the temple. And when the fire was destroyed the temple, Julius Caesar took the Doha back to Rome. It was gigantic. It was a 300-foot long a pyramid, a monument. And he put it on a ship and took it to Rome. Now, that story is connected with the Ark, the Noah's Ark. It turns out that that stone was the keel of Noah's Ark. And it was inscribed by hand by Adam and Eve, Adam and his son Seth. Seth was the third son who helped him write it. And they took the original text to Noah. And Noah put it in the ark. And he was told by God to build an ark. And the keel was the Zohar. That's how it was preserved all of these thousands of years. But it hasn't been published in the West until 2001. And it's hard to start in the middle where we just jumped to the year Adam Weishaupt, when he made the Illuminati, he jumped to the year 1570, no, 1750, and he created the Illuminati, but he had knowledge of the Zohar that was never published. And now that it's published, everybody is in a tizzy trying to figure out who said what first and who thought of the plan to disrupt the world and cause all the chaos which we now see in the world. And God is very upset to see this chaos because God doesn't lie and he doesn't cause chaos. And he says that if the chaos continues any further, he'll come back and destroy all the people who are causing the chaos. And that's the Armageddon philosophy. And people who study it are engulfed in this thought. And you can't help getting engulfed in it, because it seems so true when you read it from the beginning. And
now, Ed, real quick, a lot of evangelical Christians and Christians in general believe that there's the end time prophecies. Many feel that we're in it because we can all, many of us see it. Okay, we see the tracks on the walls, and they're caused by what we call the Illuminati. Now, for an explanation real fast, so the people that have never heard about what Illuminati is, simply take the back of a Federal Reserve note, a dollar bill, $1 bill, and look at the pyramid with the all-seeing eye. That's Lucifer. And then his 100 Illuminati underneath him is the first layer of bricks on that pyramid. And then it goes down to, spreads out into the crime syndicate, these 100 families that control 90% of the wealth of the world and the governments. Now, these are humans that are in control of all this money for this, they call the gray men's empire. It's like my former father-in-law, Illuminati banker, reportedly died, and I believe he's dead. And I understand now what's gone on. His body stashed by these so-called aliens because they were jumping in and out of him. And the Illuminati bankers go perform human sacrifices to Satan. They're Satanists, Luciferians, they call themselves, the humans. It's all tied to They call them the aliens, but they're not aliens. They're fallen angels, folks. The reality of it is they're fallen angels, not aliens. And it says in Genesis 6 that they mate with humans because they find them fond. They have sex with them. They have children by them. And that deals with a lot of things that I've seen over the years, and many people have stories, and Barbara Hartwell has one, a former CIA operative, special census, two extra strains of DNA in her. Great gal, but she had injected in her mother's womb when she was an infant. I mean, when she was in her womb. And they injected these strains of DNA. They've experimented on humans. These things, these creatures, they call them reptilians, people that are in the know. David Icke touches on them, davidicke.com. He's written books about this stuff. Transformationofamerica.com. Kathy O'Brien touches on it, that the shapeshift. George Herbert Walker Bush shapeshifted in front of her. And she was what was known as a worldwide Bush crime syndicate that kidnapped, in the category of sex slaves, children, young girls. They do it with boys even. And it's sick stuff that goes on with these Satanists. But these are what they call the Illuminati bankers. And they're all Satanists. And people have to understand, we're trying to explain, I'm bringing it up to kind of the current date, as I call him the professor and have for years, Ed Slade. Former Area 51 top government scientist that's here with us tonight. Well, these creatures drink blood. They kill infants. I've reported on it since 2001. It took me. It took me an understanding from 1984 to 2001 about what my ex-in-law was doing, killing children and drinking its blood and hosting the party. Twice a year, on the summer solstice and the winter solstice, which is June the 21st and December the 22nd, that these Satanists worship upon. And it's ironic that these 2012 end time prophecies that are on the History Channel right now end on December the 22nd, 2012. But that date of December the 22nd is a satanic holiday. Now, what's interesting is, Ed, our friends that used to host a little get-together you and I used to attend in Las Vegas, she knew Anton LaVey's son, Anthony, who's a Christian minister, who was castrated, folks, castrated on the altar of Satan at the Kimball Castle in Sedalia, Colorado, south of Denver, between Denver and Colorado Springs. He was castrated. And before he was castrated, he had been locked up. And it's in a radio interview of Anthony up on StuWeb.com. And it's up there in the recording. You go up there and click on live. Look under table contents. Go down the left-hand column. Look at Leonard Millman, Satanism. This was a 13-year-old kid that was castrated, left to be dead. One of the security guards happened to take him to the hospital and drop him off at the emergency room and run, because he sees some other kids dragging him out of the house. In that interview, he talks about being locked up in the secret underground tunnel underneath Leonard Millman's house at number 1 Eudora Street, Denver, Colorado. I want you all to listen to that. I'm going to leave it as that. The fallen angels are the aliens. They want blood. Now, there was a top-level secret agreement of 1954 to 2012 between the aliens and the United States of America's government. And it touches into what 60 Minutes talked about back in the 1990s, that Al Martin of AlMartinRaw.com, the Iran-Contra whistleblower, has in his book, The Conspirators, about CZX Corp, Casey Zumwalt X-Files. And 60 Minutes didn't pay him, so they didn't get the understanding of what it meant. CZX Corp is Casey Zumwalt X-Files, folks. They got to have a front company to hide identity, you got it. But Ed, I'm going to let you have it.
Well, Stu Webb has one attack on the Illuminati, which is very factual, and I must say it's very you lose your temper when you study it, because I have looked at it from a different point of view. I looked at it that the aliens are the descendants of the children that were manufactured when the creatures were kicked out of heaven and they kicked out to earth. So the angels who were serving God rebelled, and they were kicked out, and one third of the angels landed on the earth. And the Bible describes what went on. They mated with children that they found by walking to and fro on the earth, and they were the first rank of children were the gods of different religions, because they were intelligent and they instructed their followers about religion. So you have to see the Buddhism, the Taoism, the Oriental religion, the Middle Eastern religion. They came from the children of the fallen angels, and they had children, and the children are existing today. Now, in the 1700s, there was such a crowd of fallen angel children that they united, and they formed the Illuminati. They were all genetically derived from the fallen angels. Now, the war that resulted from 1750, when Adam Weishaupt announced that he formed the Illuminati with 10 different people who were descendants, is the beginning of the Rothschild Empire. And it spread to an amazing number of people. Now, we have the names of all the people from that date, and I look at it very factually to see who they are. Now, it turns out that they all are bankers. Rothschild was just a nickname called Red Shield, and there's so many jokes of how the name got started that it's illuminating to you to read it 3,300 years later. It's amusing because it's true, but I looked at it for all the facts that Steve, that Sue Webb created in his text, and he has thousands of facts, and each fact he backs up with text. And I have spent 75 years of my life analyzing the people, and I've interrogated the people behind the stories, and I've never found the web to be in error. When you speak to the people and they trust you, they give you the truth. And the truth is all of the facts that the web has disclosed, but in disclosing it, he loses his temper because they're so unbelievable.
And yeah, I do that.
And I try to not lose my temper and to examine the facts. And if a certain person lives in Colorado, I check them out, and there is a person, there is an address, there, and he has a following, and if you're lucky enough to speak to these people, because I have been to Rothschild, I've been to the Queen of England, I've been to Johnson, the president, and I've had very private conversations. For example, when I spoke to Johnson, he said, "You guys make the Colt 16," and at that time I did make the Colt 16 with the company, and he said, "I need a machine gun the size of a pistol, because if anybody's going to assassinate me in a parade, I'm going to whip out my machine gun and take out the whole bunch of people." So I said, "You can only take out 20 people because it's 20 bullets in a Colt." He said, no, make it 30 bullets. "I want to make sure I get everybody." So we made a weapon that was like the F-16. We did it fast. We sawed off the stock. We sawed off the barrel and made it shorter. And we put 30 bullets in a magazine. And we did that lickety-split. And we got it so it fit in his pocket. We got it so short and so quick that it fit in his pocket with a holster. And he had it on his person when he went to conferences in the street, and he was out in public, and he felt secure that he could answer an attack. And of course he was not attacked, and a lot had to do with the people knew he had a weapon, but they didn't test him. And he felt secure, and our job was done. And things like that make Stu Webb's story real, because after all the shooting and all the chaos, I met with the director of the war, the Vietnamese war, and he was 95 when I met him, and he lamented that he lost the war because he got bad orders. His order was self-defeating, and that was an overview of a personal opinion. Now, those personal opinions take wings, and they circulate, and I can't dispute them, because they were the real feelings of Westmoreland, who was in charge of the war, and he was very sad at age 95 that he didn't win, because he's a winner, and he was held back by political decisions. And when Stu Webb talks about it, I never found an error in his discussion, but he gets a little rambunctious, and the people attack Stu Webb instead of attacking the feeling of Westmoreland, or the feeling of the person who was defeated.
Well, we aren't defeated yet, and I thank you for the compliments, Professor, and same to you, and you know that. Here's what I want to do. We're talking about fallen angels, which are the aliens, cast out of heaven when the war happened, and it's in the Bible, it's in the Word. And then they're down here. It starts in the Garden of Eden, first mating of humans with aliens. And then it talks about it in Genesis 6, for those of you Christians out there can go look up your scriptures.
And then there's a generational. And it's just like I found, folks, you know, I married into the Bush crime syndicate, probably a fallen angel's daughter, from what I understand. And that's hard to swallow, and it's been hard to swallow for over a year, especially since I was kept from my own job for 25 years. It's over her soul is what it's over, because they sell their own children and grandchildren's souls. Whether my ex was a daughter of a fallen angel, I don't know that. I know that Leonard was occupied by something huge to be in that Illuminati 100. And I'm beginning to believe that the Illuminati 100 bankers are not human. That's the reason they're controlling, like Milman, controlling 90% of the world's wealth. It's the satanic side of it. A lot of Christians believe it's the mark of the beast. 666 can't buy or sell. It's coming. Well, they've already got everybody marked. Everybody's seen. Everybody's heard. And you say, no, yes. The whole planet is covered at every minute. They know what's going on. The alien technology that we have today is down in the form of computers and other things that we use on a daily basis. And to bring them up to speed, Ed, I'd like for you to touch on, and I'm just going to keep quiet on the Adam and Eve connection and give them a quick history lesson, should we say, of things over the years that, you know, the different fallen angels over the centuries have come about, how they're there today. But I also want to address one other thing, Ed, because I didn't do it, and I'm trying to throw in my opinion along with a professional like you that was there. I asked you a couple of times in Las Vegas when you were sitting on my couch in my living room, kidding with you first, I asked you because I was really serious about it, and I remember your answer, and the answer was no. And I asked you the simple question. I said, you thought they were aliens, but if you had known that they were fallen angels, would you have worked for them? And I remember your answer being no twice, two different times. But you didn't know, did you?
I looking back at that conversation, I still maintain no as an answer. But all the questions keep changing with time, because the more you learn, the more your question gets developed. And when the aliens, first alien that created was Cain, because Adam and Eve had two children, and the first one was Cain, and he was created with Satan as the father. And you have to read the Genesis very carefully to discover that, because after Cain was born, shortly thereafter, which means he had a twin brother, shortly thereafter, Abel was born, but Abel was created by God. So Eve had two husbands make two children that came at birth at the same time. Now, it started with the aliens coming from the children of Cain. And Abel was killed by Cain. And God put a mark on Cain so that no one would kill him, but they would ignore him. And in the Zohar, it recounts a story, which is a whole book, a story in the fourth book of the Zohar, that Cain was walking around on the earth to and fro, and he just stumbled into the Garden of Lamech, Lamech was the father of Noah. Now, Lamech was very old, and Cain stumbled into his garden at night, and Lamech said, well, somebody's here, but it was dark, and he couldn't see anyway. And he picked up a rock, and he killed Cain, not knowing who it was. And the story is in the Zohar, and I asked the question to Bible class, if Noah was saved in the ark, and all his family was saved, why didn't they save Lamech? Nobody knew. And they said, oh, it's probably in the Bible, I'll look it up. And they couldn't find it, because that is not included. It's one book in the Zohar, and it's a small book in the King James Version. They delineated a whole book into one page, just talking about Noah. And they leave out all the infighting and all the political controversy that occurred at that time. Now, that has not been lost. That is in the Library of Congress, and you can read it. And if you start reading, it's 22 volumes, big volumes, and you'll be dead by the time you read the whole 22 volumes. That's why you have scholars to summarize the story, because I feel that you can't make an intelligent opinion unless you summarize the original story. Now, if you summarize that, a scholar will say, I'll summarize it for you if you stand on one foot until I'm finished. And of course, the longest I've been able to summarize is 8 days. I have spoken on these stories for 8 days continuously. And it's not a world's record, because somebody beat me by 11 days without sleeping by standing in 42nd Street in Manhattan. And he was in a glass box, and he was talking to everybody in front of him. And he stood awake for 11 days, and it could be done. If you're really enthusiastic about the subject, you can talk for endless time. And then when you pass out, you pass out. But a philosopher says, I will tell you all I know if you will stay awake for as long as I can tell you. And nobody can do that, because the average person has trouble after the first or second day of staying awake. And find the story of Noah's family. Noah didn't take his father, because his father broke the commandment, thou shalt not kill. And he killed accidentally Cain. God said to the people on the world, don't kill Cain. And he did. So he's not going to be judged. He's going to be judged because he broke the commandment. And God is merciful by his own testimony. So if he's taken to heaven, he'll go through the first jury, which is Jesus. The second jury is 1,000 years after the people have been educated again. And that's the white throne judgment, where God decides who's saved and who's not. So there's two Armageddon. There's one was Jesus, who is the Savior, and white throne judgment is from God Himself to choose the loyal people. Now, in such a situation, Lamech might survive. But Lamech's father was Methuselah. And God said to Methuselah, as long as you live, I will not harm the earth. But if you read the Bible and you have to use a magnifying glass to read the King James Version, on the day that Methuselah died, the flood began. That's how close everything was predicted by God when He wrote the Bible. Methuselah lived and everybody was happy, but the rest of the world was unrighteous. And when Methuselah died at 969 years, then God said, the rest of the world is corrupt, and he gave Noah 100 years to build the ark. So for 100 years he was building it, and in that 100 years the Zohar was put on a keel. These are the inside stories of the people who believe the Kabbalah. The book is called the Zohar, and that's the book I referred to on ISBN. And the ISBN number, if anybody is really, really interested, and they're not afraid to read and read and not be able to put the book down, I'll give the number again so that they can get a pencil and check it out. It's so important because all the stories flow from the ISBN.
Go ahead and give it out again there, Ed.
Yes. It's 1-57189-076-9. And that was published the first day of the seventh millennium. And God said He will destroy the world as we know it in the seventh millennium. And there's been so much activity on that subject. And fast forward to 1750, when Adam Weishaupt got into the act by forming the Illuminati with the descendants of the fallen angels. It's been a very vicious story, and the chaos is great, and God really is going to put His foot down to remove the chaos.
Now, Ed, let's take it from, say, 1940s. What's happened since the 40s with the alien connection, into cloning, into everything, into flying saucers? You told me a story one time, maybe you can talk about it, about meeting someone in New Mexico. Remember? With the pyramid?
That's an unusual year. The year to pick is 1933. That's the year that Roosevelt took power in the United States. And the first thing he did was make the law saying gold is not money. And that is a constitutional absurdity, because the Constitution defines money in terms of ounces of gold. And 1 ounce of gold was $20. And all the $20 pieces for 1 ounce of gold. And when Roosevelt took office, the first thing he did was to say, okay, we have a depression. Turn in your gold because it's no good. I command the law that all the gold has to be held by the Treasury. So bring your gold in. And that was a non sequitur because it didn't make sense. If gold is no good, then money is no good. And we see the result of that law today because the money is not gold. It's a Federal Reserve note, which is paper. And
which, by the way, just got audited for the very first time, thanks to Dr. Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul.
Well, Ron Paul is trying to bring it back to the point where the gold is effective. Now, he has done that where it's a freely floating market of gold. It has its own worth, and the worth is made by humans, and that's the problem. God made the worth of gold $20 an ounce, and he kept it there for many years, for many centuries. But humans have taken the worth of gold and made it. Now it's over $1,000 per ounce, which is fabrication. They just say it's worth it.
And it's pushing to 15. We'll hit 15, I believe, soon.
Well, they'll hit 3,000. They'll hit any number that they think of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bizarre because that causes the chaos. If you have no discipline in monetary finance, all of the objections that you make, and you make it very vociferously, I check the assertion, and I
we're coming up.
Ed, hold on, Ed. We're having a problem here. Being heard.
Yeah, Stu, we're coming up on an hour. We're going to go into a 2 minutes, 2 minutes,
Ed,
7 second break.
Okay, Ed, are you there with me?
Ed,
okay, we can hardly hear you.
Okay, we're going to go to break, and we'll be right back with Ed Slade and Stu Webb doing the hosting for this show on this. And this is Freedom Fighters for America World Radio, www.freedomfightersforamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you. is Freedom Fighters for America World Radio at www.freedomfightersforamerica.com. We're waiting for our guest and our host to come back onto the show. It seems like they've been disconnected, so we'll stand by with another song, and hopefully we'll hear from them very shortly. Please stay tuned. We're going to continue to stand by, and we're trying to reach our guest. Apparently, he's been disconnected off the call. So, please stay tuned. Freedom Fighters for America World Radio, which is www.freedomfightersforamerica.com. Thank you. standing by. We'll be trying to reach our host at this moment in time, so please stand by. It's Freedom Fighters for America Radio. We were speaking with Ed Slade and Stu Webb, so we'll be right back.
Yes, Independence, I can take over for a minute
Thank
while you,
you
call the guest.
Thank you.
We apologize, folks. We lost our guest. We're trying to get a hold of him. In the meantime, I'm going to play a little song here for you.
Song, and I'm still waiting for our guest. He should be back momentarily. Thank
and
you,
we are
Peter.
People, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, There is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence and the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news. For it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. So it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will...
We want to welcome you back to Freedom Fighters for America Radio. We have been having some technical difficulties here, and our host and our guest are back on the air. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris, and thank you for playing that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to end the show. We're going to make it two parts. We're going to do another hour with Chris, if you'll do that, Chris.
Because we can't get
communications with Ed. They've blown a speaker out in his phone. I've had that happen myself on ground lines.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it to, you know, with their toys to keep him off.
No,
we're going to be back. Stu Webb, this is Stu Webb, and I call him Professor Ed Slade, former U.S. scientist. And we're going to finish the discussion. I'm going to end it with this, food for thought, especially to you Christians out there and you believers in God and the ones that will want to be on the right side. This is good versus evil, and we're in a very tough time. Think about your enemy. If this is your enemy and you don't even know it exists, can't you destroy it with your belief, prayer against the enemy? I'm going to leave us with that and ask each and every person that heard this show to get down on their hands and knees before God Almighty and ask him if we're bringing you the truth. And if not, to judge me and Ed. With that, have a good night, folks.
Okay, thank you very much. I was Stu Webb, and this is Freedom Fighters for America World Radio. We will be back on the air tonight at 9 p.m., with a rebroadcast of Granny Warrior, Linda Honeycutt. So we hope you tune into that show. And we want to thank you for tuning in. I'm sorry for the difficulties that we've had with the technical problems, but these things do happen on occasion. So we will have another show with these two gentlemen. So, again, thank you for tuning in. Freedom Fighters for America World Radio, www.freedomfightersforamerica.com.
I'm a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road. Lieutenant the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wires. I can hear you through the wine. And the witches all I know is still on the line. I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever end the strain. And I need you more than want you. And I want you for all time. And the wish is all I need. It's still on the and I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time, and the wind is all I'm doing, it's still on the line.
Freedom Fighters for America World Radio, and we'll be back tonight at 9 p.m.